when it happened, I was sort of just chatting with my friends, and apparently as he came over, I turned my head, and that's when he just lined it up and booted me in the head. It turns out I ended up, this was in half, and up here, the connector sort of bit where your top jaw and bottom jaw connect, that was like the surgeons described it as if you throw a beer bottle at the ground and it smashes. So that was all shattered up here.
Imagine 1 minute you're sitting down chatting to your mates, and the next you're knocked unconscious by someone you've never met. That's what happened to Blake on a night out in 2012, and it's had a life-changing impact on the now 32-year-old. Blake's ordeal put him through the ringer physically and mentally, and recently becoming a father himself has given him another perspective on just how devastating that attack could have been for his family and community. His desire to be a role model for other coward punch survivors and young men is the motivation behind his current attempt to break the world record for most consecutive days completing an indoor triathlon, which stands at 77. This isn't just a story about a senseless assault. It's about valuing your life and making the most of it. This is Blake Manwaring's story. Welcome to Young Blood, the award-winning volunteer podcast dedicated to young men's mental health. My name's Callum McPherson. I'm a journalist, and this is a platform for everyday men to share lived experience stories and show that no matter what you're going through, you're not alone. Suicide is the number one killer of young people, and changing that starts with speaking up. So let's do it. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss a thing. Help us reach more people by taking 10 seconds to give the show a rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you've got some feedback on this conversation, I'd love to hear it. You can vote in the poll and leave a comment on every Spotify episode. I read them all. This episode is proudly sponsored by NBNA Group. NBNA has a single focus: to support and guide people on their path to recovery from injury and illness, whether it's mental health or physical education programs, treatment or restoration following injury or illness. They can put together the right services for education, recovery, and return to work. Learning mental health first aid is as essential as physical first aid. This training supports people to spot the signs, have the confidence to provide initial help, and guide a person towards support. It's about learning to listen, reassure, and respond to the warning signs of depression, anxiety, psychosis, and substance use, potentially preventing a crisis. Check out their training and recovery options and services at nbassociates.com.au or Google NBNA Group. This show touches on some tough topics that may provoke strong emotions. If you find anything in this chat distressing, please do whatever you need to do to look after yourself.
Blake, can you take us through your recollection of what happened on that night that changed your life?
So going back over 10 years now, it was actually Anzac Day in 2012. And the night, the way I sort of describe it too, the visions and memories that I have are very hazy, but they're very much in like slow motion because I was obviously concussed looking back. But I was sitting down waiting for a lift home, and I had friends either side of me, and there was some commotion going on across the road, a guy and a girl, and I sort of yelled out, and a couple of other guys sort of yelled out, just little things like, oh, she doesn't want to go home with you, or some things like that. And then it was literally 20 minutes to 30 minutes later, and this is from the witness statements, not from my memory, but that guy then came over and said who was talking shit, and came up and just booted me directly in the head as I was sitting down. So the witness statements from my mate who was sitting next to me said it was like he was kicking off for a game of footy, and he kicked me flush right here. And then obviously I was obviously knocked out, and to my friends they thought I was dead because I just obviously went completely to the ground. But then my next vision is I'm walking across the road, and I'm looking in a shop window at my own reflection, and I thought I had just a missing tooth, but my jaw was actually split, so there was like a perfect gap right there. And it was just lucky my best mate, he just said, we've got to take you up to hospital straight away. And that was my recollection of that moment and that night. To me, it happened very quick. Apparently, it obviously spaced out a little bit, but it's from then on that obviously I remember a lot of it, but from that time, yeah, I don't remember too much because I was obviously, yeah, knocked out.
So you had no idea this guy was going to attack you?
None at all. There was no confrontation. And essentially, like, it was unprovoked, you know, like I didn't say anything threatening. No one said anything threatening. So it was an unprovoked attack. And not to play the victim card at all. It was just obviously like it was out of nowhere. It was a very random thing and very random attack.
And it wasn't even immediately after saying something. There was there was a gap of 20 minutes or so before this guy came out of nowhere. So there's no way you would have seen it coming.
Exactly right. And I wasn't even looking when it happened too. I was sort of just chatting with my friends, and apparently as he came over, I turned my head, and that's when he just lined it up and booted me in the head. It turns out I ended up, this was in half, and up here, the connector sort of bit where your top jaw and bottom jaw connect. That was like the surgeons described it as if you throw a beer bottle at the ground and it smashes. So that was all shattered up here. And then, yeah, where I was from too at the time was in a small town of Taree in New South Wales, and they didn't have the resources available for surgery at the hospital. So I had to make the call to mum at 4 a.m. in the morning, and I sort of said everything's okay, but there's been an accident and I need to go to Newcastle, which was about a two-hour drive from
Taree.
How
did you even talk at that point?
Well, I think shock came over. I wasn't in pain or anything at all. I couldn't even feel it. When we got to Taree Hospital, I got immediately injected with morphine because they obviously saw something I didn't know. They obviously saw that there was something pretty bad. I couldn't feel anything. I think adrenaline was through my body. I was in no pain. It was post-surgery that I felt the pain, but at the time I couldn't even feel it. But yeah, I was talking just how I am now, absolutely fine. But and it wasn't as if I was even highly intoxicated either. Like, I wasn't drunk or anything at all. By that time of the morning, you know, we were ready for bed. We were done. So yeah, it was odd, like, looking back now. But yeah, having to call mum, and she just went into pure mum mode and came straight in, and I was going in and out of consciousness on the drive down to Newcastle. So we had to pull over a couple of times on the freeway, and for me to vomit and stuff as well from being knocked out.
You didn't get an ambulance between?
There was a couple of incidents that actually happened that night. So the security guards of where we just were at the pub, they were fed up with everybody and they didn't want to have anything to do with it. They had zero assistance. So Taree's hospital was actually only probably a 10-minute walk in theory. So we called the courtesy bus of the pub up to the hospital. Because, yeah, the security didn't want it. And then, too, you know, we didn't have mobile phones. I was 19 or something. I don't think I even had a mobile phone.
Jeez, going back a bit now.
Yeah. I was like, I think a few of my mates had a mobile phone, but I don't think had one. And, yeah, so we caught the courtesy bus at the pub up to the hospital and immediately, boom, straight injection, called mum. Once we got down to Newcastle, I had to fast for 48 hours and then, yeah, had my surgery, and I've got a plate in here and a plate up here now. So,
were they worried about brain damage?
There was the talk, because I did have a like a small laceration on the back of my head. So when I got kicked, I hit the back of my head either on the wall behind me or on the ground. So they were a little bit worried. But mate, I struggled with memory and things of my childhood until I was about. Well, I was 19 then, until about 25, 26, and then things started coming back to me. So I definitely had something. I didn't want to go to the extent of getting some scans, but they were worried at the time.
I suppose in your case, because you were sitting down, you didn't fall and smash your head on the sidewalk, which is what typically kills people when they're standing up and they get coward punched.
Yeah, exactly. You know, in a sense, yeah, I'm obviously very lucky. Like, it was very... Like the reaction of my mate who was sitting next to me too, he immediately laid on top of me. And so once I got hit, he immediately just covered and laid on top of me. And, you know, this guy too, my mate, isn't an intimidating guy or anything. He just wanted to protect me in case this guy was going to go for more. And that was his immediate reaction, because I just obviously dropped. And then, yeah, he laid on top of me.
But the attacker just kicked you in the face and then just walked off.
Yeah, he ran off. A lot of my mates and witnesses, they were very shocked. One of my mates chased after him, and then another guy chased after. There was another friend with him from memory, and apparently got in a dust up with him later on that night or whatever. But don't quote me on that. Something happened. Yeah, he just ran off. He just took off. Yeah, there was absolutely no confrontation, and that's what's even harder too. You know, like there was no opportunity to even talk things out if there was a problem or nothing. It was just an immediate boom, straight attack.
And did you end up finding out who that was, and did they ever face consequences?
I only knew his name through. He went to a different school as well, but I only knew his name through some of my mates that played footy. I didn't play footy, but I had a lot of footy mates, and my cousins played footy against him. So I only knew his name from there. Mum and dad, obviously, they pressed charges. So there was a huge court process that I actually wasn't exposed to until, I was about 24 or 25, because probably 6 months after the attack, I moved away to Hamilton Island because I just had enough of the area and there was nothing happening for me. And so mum and dad were going through this whole process and I didn't even know, because they didn't want me to worry or I didn't even know mum and dad were going to court and he was in courtrooms and things like that. It was only, there was a time I think I went to one or two, but I definitely went to one of the last ones where he got sentenced for 4 months imprisonment. And that was really full on and confronting because obviously his family was in the room, our family was in the room, and, you know, mixed emotions on both sides. But then that afternoon, we got phoned by a local journalist that he got let out on bail straight away. And then his final one, he got given 10 months good behaviour. And then that was it.
And was he same age as you?
I think he was 22, 23 at the time, and I was 19. So, yeah, a fair bit older.
What's your awareness of what your parents went through with all of that?
Mate, it's only why I've brought it to light the last couple of years since becoming a parent myself. Like, I've kept this all to myself for such a long time. I moved away to Hamilton Island for about 5 or 6 years, and it's only the core group of my mates that sort of knew the story and what happened. But when I relocated to the Gold Coast, hardly anybody, if anyone, definitely my work colleagues, had no idea what happened. So I can only imagine what mum and dad sort of had to absorb and go through, because when I'm looking at Cooper, my son, I get emotional thinking about it now. I can't imagine him getting hurt. So, yeah, it's bloody hard, mate, to think about what they went through. I'm the oldest of three kids. I've got two younger sisters, and mate, and to be so tough and what they went through as well, it's incredible the resilience that they've shown too. Not once have they cracked in emotion or anything. They've just been strong for us kids.
What was their stance on it in making sure that they were going to take that person to court and then following the process through and wanting to handle it themselves? What did they say to you about what they thought was important and how they viewed it all?
Dad was actually overseas in the bloody Middle East for work. I think he was, that's why I had to call mum. And so dad immediately wanted to catch a plane, contact the uncles and cousins and chuck them in a van to go out to find this guy. That he was just ready to come home.
The good old fashioned method.
Oh yeah, you know, like I'm your standard six foot one kind of guy, but my cousins are almost touching 7 foot and very big dudes. So he was just ready to chuck them all in the van and go out and find this bloke. But
fortunately, opted against that though, so the whole family didn't end up in prison.
yeah, but definitely, obviously, they had the reasonable decision to, we need to press charges because we need to make a stand here. You know, I know it happens everywhere, but small country towns, a lot of things get away with. It's bloody awesome that they took a stand and set an example that, you know, you can't let these sort of things get by and he's just going to go out and hurt somebody else. So hopefully this has taught him a lesson.
And how did you view it at the time, soon after it had happened to you and you'd endured this traumatic event? But I'd imagine there's a lot of shock involved. There's the fact that you don't remember everything. It doesn't all necessarily piece together. How did you view it immediately after the fact?
I definitely didn't process it, mate. Like I definitely didn't understand the full extent, honestly, until I probably matured. The first couple of years in my 20s, you know, especially moving away and sort of blocking it all out, I definitely didn't grasp everything until later 20s. At the time, it was more of, I've had an accident, I need to get better. And being in that small country town didn't really allow me to do that, to move on and get better. So, yeah, at the time, and like I lost so much weight. I lost about 12 kilos. And, you know, I'm not a big guy at the best of times anyway. So I got really, really skinny because I couldn't eat properly or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, what was the recovery process in terms of fixing your face?
I had braces growing up in high school anyway, but I had to get a sort of another plate across my bottom jaw teeth to sort of keep them all stable. Food was all pureed. Everything was pureed. Mum, like genius, I lived off those frozen lasagnas, and you could just puree them, and I was just smashing these pureed lasagnas.
And that was good?
Mate, they were unreal.
No so way.
It took me a long time to put weight back on, because obviously I couldn't move my jaw. But in terms of like rehab or anything, there was nothing really set. It was just, you know, sort of do a lot more talking and a lot more exercise surrounding. If you start to feel pain, just do your jaw exercises.
How long were you eating puree for?
Yeah, probably, yeah, a good couple of months. Yeah, probably 3 to 4 months. Yeah.
Yeah. And then your attitude was just to try to forget about it?
I think that was subconscious. I think I just blocked it out because I didn't want to sort of dwell on it. I didn't want to make it about the guy that did it to me. I didn't want to be negative. I didn't want to play the victim card. I was almost just pretending there was nothing wrong as well. Like, sort of going around business as if I didn't have an injury or anything.
Did you believe that there was nothing wrong though as well?
Yeah. Yeah, at the time. Yeah. Being 19, 20, you know, I was so focused on just being social with my mates. Like I didn't really think too much about what was happening, but it was only until, yeah, my mid-20s that I realised, holy shit, there's something going on here.
So given that it's more than a decade on now, how's your perspective on this changed?
I'm a lot more aware of my emotions and how I'm feeling, and my perception on the actual incident itself. I'm not angry. I haven't forgiven what happened. I just hope that the guy that did it, he has a story to tell. He has a lesson to teach, and he could have easily ended up in jail for a long time. He could have killed me. He's obviously, the way he reacts on, I don't know what he was taking, if he was blah, 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 on drinking or whatever. But if he has that aggressive nature, which I don't, how's he going to manage that and teach other kids and blokes in their 20s to manage that? Because this could be the end result. So that's how I'm looking at it now. At the time, in my early 20s, I honestly blocked it out. I haven't spoken about it until the last couple of years since Cooper's been born. And that's why I want to, you know, get it out there and try and make a difference.
And just because you're blocking something out and you're suppressing it doesn't mean that it's not affecting you. So yeah, reflecting on 19 to 25, 19 to now, how did this incident affect who you became and permeate into the rest of your life?
It got me a lot more in touch with, I knew that something wasn't right, because I would always try and deviate away from conflict and the problem. And not that I have ever been in a confrontational situation, but even I'd be sitting at the pub on Hamilton Island, and I'd instantly think that blokes want to bash me. I'd instantly think, if I'm seen chatting to his girlfriend, he's going to come over and want to bash me. That's
so hypervigilance.
Yeah, yeah. And I honestly thought that for a long time. I thought I couldn't, you know, even I couldn't even be sitting next to someone, because I thought, you know, am I being watched right now? And I'm not making this up at all. I felt so, and I didn't even realize, like looking back, it's probably a sense of anxiety at the time, but I felt anxious being around people, especially women and girls that I didn't know, in the chance, if I knew that they had a boyfriend, that boyfriend would become aggressive towards me.
And underneath that is living with a fear that wasn't there before.
Definitely. I was such a confident kid in high school, in the later years of high school leading up to this. I was so confident. I could have had fun with whoever I wanted and not be worried at all. There was also, I was so worried about hurting myself. Like, you know, when you're in your group of mates and you have a wrestle with the boys or whatever it is, I wouldn't even do that anymore. I was just scared to hurt my body again. But it was mainly in a social setting, I was worried about getting hurt.
And what about your sense of self? Did it affect your confidence? Did it make you see something different when you looked in the mirror, or were you a bit more detached from what had happened?
I didn't like the way I was I never liked the way I was behaving in these social settings because I thought I was doing something that people didn't like. So, you know, leading up to that, I thought everybody loved me. I thought, you know, my loved ones loved me. I thought I could chat to anybody who I wanted and I could make that friend. But there was a long time where I'd be like, okay, obviously people don't like me, and that's maybe a reality where, okay, that person I'm going to go chat to mightn't like me, and I might get hurt from this. Or yeah, there's so many thoughts going on. Even though on the surface I probably look like a confident guy, and you know, I could chat to girls, I could do whatever I wanted, sort of thing. But there was always a thought that someone's not going to like me, and I'm going to get hurt.
And did that make you more of a people pleaser, or someone who was constantly thinking about, you know, how do you keep everyone happy? How do you make it so that other people aren't going to be threatening and everyone's cool? Was that something that was on your mind?
100%. Yeah, 100%. And, you know, not that I'd be disrespectful or anything at all to people, but, you know, I was so confident in chatting to people that then post this, my confidence, okay, may have come across, but I was also extremely nice in mediating things and having a conversation and flattering people all the time. And I was also hoping to get that response as well, to get the flattery, because I felt pretty crap within myself. I was hoping if I commented on how good someone's doing or how good looking they are, I'm hoping to get that as a response as well. So,
well, with that mustache, mate, you must have had plenty of good feedback.
Oh, mate, but to me, honestly, mate, like what you said before about looking in the mirror, I didn't like myself at all. And I was like, I don't like the way I look. I don't like the way I'm behaving. Whereas I probably wasn't doing anything wrong.
So what was at the root of you not liking yourself, do you think?
Yeah, I reckon. I really think so, because leading up to that, I loved myself in high school. I loved the way I was. Prior to this haircut, I had long hair and braces. I was a little punk kid, and I loved the way I was. And then when, you know, my high school girlfriend at the time, she decided to change my hair up, I loved that confidence. I loved the way I looked, you know, mixed it up a bit. But after that, I was, you know, to the surface, I probably was pretty confident, but I wasn't at all. I hated the way I was.
Was that because you then believed that you couldn't protect yourself?
Yeah, 100%. And I wasn't as big as most blokes as well. I struggled to put on weight. Even when I was trying to train at the gym, there was just zero results. So I was like, what's this all for?
So what did you do? Did you go and do self-defense, or how have you been able to change that mentally?
Well, not in terms of self-defense. It was more of a mental, cool way of putting it, a mental self-defense in a way. Like, so once I left Hamilton Island, I was there for about 5 or 6 years. And when I was 25, 26 was when I was very, very at my worst mentally. I had to work on myself. And once I worked and fell in love with myself, I am back to that kid when he was 16 years old with long hair and braces that loved himself.
So how did you get there? I'm guessing that wasn't an easy task.
Nah. So when my sister and I first moved to the Gold Coast, I was all over the shop. I lived on a blow up mattress for a long time. And like, I know that I had support with my family, and if I needed it financially, they would have helped. But there was also, I'm so glad that they didn't, because I had to get myself out of that rut.
Oh yeah, man. I slept on some pretty dodgy mattresses for a while there as well. It does build character. You just don't want it to go on for too long.
Yeah. There was even, so 6 days I didn't have a blow up mattress, so I slept on a couple of towels, because that's all I had.
Nice.
Blow up mattress pop.
Yeah. That would have built discipline.
Yeah. And there was even a couple of days there where I was at work and I had no petrol. I had to wait for a tip, so to get some cash so I could get to the closest petrol station so I could actually get home. So I slept in my car, I think, for 2 nights in the car park at work.
Right. But then, so you were too proud to ask your parents for any help?
Yeah.
They would have been pretty pissed off at you to hear that, I'm guessing. Or do they not know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, mum and dad especially, he's very good with making structured plans and saving and all that. And he gave it to me, and I still didn't even follow it. And I think now I do, obviously, and I'm very grateful for that. But I wasn't in the mindset to listen either. And it was just trying to figure it all out on my own. And that's when I sort of started. I met Emma, my partner, pretty much a week after I moved to the Gold Coast, and she became my first friend. And then that obviously developed into what it is now. But there was also finally someone that was also giving me the time of day, even though I was a piece of shit in my own mind and I wasn't in love with myself. Someone was falling in love with me, and it was very new and rare to me to think that when I look at myself in the mirror, I absolutely hate myself. I hate the way how did I get to this point? I've got no money. I've just left Hamilton Island. I live on the Gold Coast. I had all the love in the world from my family and friends, but then there was something different with this other person who, even as a friend, we'd work the same shift together. She would make me dinner and bring it in to work. And just those, like, we weren't even, you know, seeing each other or anything. We were just work colleagues. And that, without her help and her standing by me as a mate at the start, it has helped me develop that confidence into being the man that I am now, because I wasn't a man at the time. I was very lost. I was very immature. And then to work on my maturity in my later 20s with her by my side has turned me into what I am now.
Generally, people who have that kind of a relationship with themselves are incapable of allowing other people to love them.
Yeah. And I'm very open with this in our family and friendship circle. It took me a long time to actually let her in. And I was very honest with her too. Once we started, feeling for each other and that sort of thing and seeing each other, I was very honest with her. I said, I can't commit because I know that I'm going to do something fucking stupid and it's going to hurt you really bad. So I can't be there as the person that you want me to be right now. And I was very open and honest, but I'm so fucking happy she stuck around. And it took a green light moment where I was sitting with a mate. We were in Brisbane, so about an hour from where we lived. And he was just playing around, texting his missus saying, oh, can you come get me? I'm hating it up here just as a joke. And I was just sort of thinking, Emma would come get me if I was to ask her to do that. Like, we weren't even together. And I was like, what am I doing? So then there was just green light. And I was like, all right, what am I doing? So from that moment, committed to her, and it's getting married this year. So
the apprehension there was based on fear of you letting her down and you being a failure, because that's ultimately how you were still viewing yourself.
Definitely. Yeah. And I just knew I knew I would do something stupid. I knew I would, I'd still talk to other girls. I would talk to her bad because I felt bad about myself.
And was that a reality?
Yeah.
So you did do stupid stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. But you are able to, you were able to learn and keep it together. And she's a very patient woman. Is that what you're saying?
Definitely, mate. Yeah. It's all written in my vows. You'll hear it in a couple of months.
So. Okay. So you met an amazing woman who got you to tidy up your act. But in terms of your relationship with yourself and things that you did to clean up your act yourself, what was that?
Yeah, I knew that I was extremely unhealthy mentally and physically, and I was just eating like crap, wasn't doing any exercise. So I'd start walking after every shift or before every shift, just a little 3-kilometer circuit around where we used to live. And then that over time turned into running. And aside from Emma, running has honestly saved my life. The running at the time sucks, but then the endorphins that you feel afterwards of achieving a goal. So I'd always set out, I want to tick off that 3-kilometer run. I want to tick off that 5-kilometer run. The feel of self-worth that still goes through me when I tick off those goals is, wow, you can do this, Blake. Like, you can, and that's, it can be a metaphor for anything. I can afford to save $200 this week, and if I tick off that little goal, you're doing all right. Like, you're not as shit as what you think you are. Like, you're capable.
That's a beautiful slogan. You're not as shit as what you think you are.
You're not as shit as what you think you are.
The inspiration, man. So that flowed on into the rest of your life, just taking small steps to start off with, going for a walk, saying to yourself that you value yourself at least enough to go for a walk around the block, and then that turned into jogging and running, and eventually into you actually starting your own online run club community. Just tell us about that and what that's become.
Because again, I was alone when I was doing all this. So I didn't know anybody on the Gold Coast apart from my work friends and Emma and my sister. So I was doing all these runs alone, but all my mates that I had made over time, they were doing their runs. Say one of my best mates is in New Zealand, one's on Hamilton Island. I was like, so how can we run together? So I just sort of made that little platform called Mates Run on Instagram. And I sort of just did it. How about every Saturday or Sunday or at a certain time, we go for a run and we tag it as a mates run. So then it's a sense of community and it's a sense of, you know, we're achieving our goals together. So then that way, you know, through leading up to the run, I'd pump it up a bit to get people actually keen to do it, because it's only on you if you want to put on your shoes and go for that run. And then, you know, it turned into a lot of people actually doing it and tagging Mates Run and throwing up their run and being proud of themselves, because it wasn't about me or anything at all. It was about, yep, this person has said that they're going to commit to a 5K run and be proud of that and share it with us. And, you know, we've all done a run together today, essentially. It started from COVID too, because well and truly couldn't run with anybody. So it was, yeah, you could do your exercise with yourself or whatever for half an hour outside or whatever it was at the time. So that then turned into, cool, we're actually still running together. We're just obviously not together physically. So, and then from there, I've just sort of every sort of exercise or idea that I've had, I've just sort of promoted it through Mates Run.
Do you ever go to therapy or counseling or anything like that?
No, I never have. I'm pretty lucky. I've got a lot of mates who are willing to listen, but I've never sought professional help. I'm definitely an advocate for it because I've had a lot of friends who have done that. But I myself, I think I missed it at the time where I probably needed it. But I'm pretty proud of myself for working on my resilience at the time to get me to where I am now, because I can openly talk and talk freely to anybody now about my experience, because a lot of young blokes growing up in their 20s probably don't have the support that I had. And looking back, I had ample support. I just didn't reach out. And it just took me, you know, for someone to give me a kick up the ass, like, and a realization like what Emma did, for me to actually start being open and talking to people.
So how do you feel about who you are now?
Mate, I love the man and father that I am now. It's taken me obviously a long time, but the Blake that's talking to you now is the same Blake and manager that when I speak to my staff, the same partner that I am to Emma, same brother that I am to my sisters. There's no hidden agenda with anything that I do. I'm very proud of being a genuine person. I don't like the idea of there's many versions of Blake. I want to be known as just the one version, because I think that's pretty important. If you're representing yourself, and your family, I think it all ties in together. You're not sitting in one spot and then you're talking to these different versions of Blake. So I'm very, very proud of getting myself to this time in my life. You know, we own a house, got a baby, getting married, and I've ticked off so many goals. So yeah, I'm very, very proud.
So actionable steps from cleaning up your diet to committing to going out on those runs, seeing the value in that, and then slowly over time developing a sense that you owed it to yourself to take those steps to better yourself for you and for Emma. And then it was about a compounding over time where you proved your own self-worth to yourself by achieving one small goal after another and applying that to your work life and your family life, and that foundation of discipline. And that's what's been under you transforming that perspective.
Definitely. And, you know, I still do it. Obviously, I'm doing it now, but I'm always setting a goal that is proving to myself for my own self-worth, but to also show to others that, you know, you can do whatever you want if you put your mind to it, because I've been very low before. And that bloke 5 years ago, looking to this Blake now, there could have been two different versions. I might not even be here one day, look, this 25-year-old Blake thinking in the future. But this is the Blake that 16-year-old Blake wanted to be and dreamed and envisioned. And I owed it to that guy back then when he was 16 years old.
And yes, you met an incredible woman, which is very fortunate for you, but we have to be the ones to change our lives ultimately. And she wouldn't be with you if you didn't decide and take the action to become who you are now. So I guess that's definitely part of the lesson here for someone who might be listening, who currently feels like they do hate themselves and they don't have control, and they've got a lot of evidence of times where they've tried and failed in the past. I suppose the point is it's never too late, and it could be something as simple as go for a walk today and go for a walk tomorrow.
As simple as that. Because you'll then get that feeling of self-worth and love for yourself. And I tell my mates who are going through similar things, I was like, fall in love with yourself before anybody else, because once you fall in love with yourself, the rest will come. And it starts with one of my mates, one of the best quotes he said is from his dad, and he said, the hardest part about going for a run is putting your shoes on. So once you put your shoes on and you're going for a walk, a run, you're doing whatever you want, if you're setting out to do something, it's for you first, because the rest and the rewards will come. But you have to work on yourself first, and it's only you that can get up and do it.
Yeah. I like the simplicity of it. I think especially for men, we always want actionable steps, because we can suffer from paralysis by analysis, where we overthink and think of all the ifs or buts, or what are we going to do? How does it all make sense? How does it all fit together? And you can end up just feeling overwhelmed and stuck and feeling worse and not going anywhere. And so I think being able to try and keep it simple, and if your mind's on a loop and it's driving you nuts, just finding a way to put your shoes on and get out of your house, or go see someone you care about and go for a walk with them, or just take some sort of action. That might even be something as small as cleaning up your living space a little bit. All these little things that reiterate to yourself that you are worth something, and you have to believe that, and you have to take the action to show that to yourself before anyone else will. Except in your case, it was kind of in reverse, but I get that. Ideally, we want to be able to do that to probably attract the kind of person that we need to have in our lives. It sounds like you got pretty lucky there at the start.
Yeah, at the start, I found someone who obviously didn't want to give up on me as well. She saw what I could be, because at the time I wasn't how I am now. So she saw the potential in what could definitely be a beautiful life together. But at the same time, it was all on me to work on that and figure it all out, because she would have got fed up at some point.
Yeah, so, well said. Yeah. Tell us about your world record attempt.
I'm attempting the world record for the most consecutive days of doing an indoor sprint triathlon. So it's the current record is 77 days, and I've applied for 80 days.
And everyone is asking, what is an indoor sprint triathlon?
Yeah, sure. So, you have your triathlon events. Obviously, they're all outdoors. But the sprint triathlon is, the distance is 750-meter swim, 20K bike ride, and a 5K run. So, obviously, in relation to the record, that's indoors. So, I'm in an indoor pool and a gym. So I'm doing the 750 meters in an indoor lap pool. Then the 20-kilometer bike ride is on your stationary bike, and the 5K runs on a treadmill. So I'm doing that every day for 80 days. And it's allowing me, and the allowance is 2 hours. So I can't break over 2 hours, otherwise it's job done.
Yeah. So on your first one, how close were you to the 2 hours?
I was humming pretty well the first 3 days. I don't think I even got over an hour 40 over the first 3 or 4 days, but I was so unfit, and I'm only just over halfway now, but I can't believe that I thought it was even a plausible idea, because like I'm going actually really well now. I'm obviously getting fitter.
You weren't training heaps leading up to it? You just started doing it?
Yeah, I was, but not doing like the consistent to, you know, 1 hour 40 blocks every single day.
Yeah.
And the first week to 10 days, day 10, I swelled. I got so big. I was full of fluid. I was so bloated.
You sank.
I pretty much did. And I looked like the marshmallow man. I was just like, my body was so full of fluid. And then I jumped in the sauna. And that week, I lost about 2 kilos of fluid. It just all fell out of me. And it was, it was wild.
That's a beautiful image. What are you doing this for?
Mate, I'm not raising money. Last year I raised money and very happy to do it, but I raised money for the Coward Punch campaign, Danny Green's fundraiser. This year I learned my lessons from last year. I was very lucky and that the Coward Punch got around what I was trying to do, but I was so focused on raising money that it distracted me from my training and the actual event itself. So I did a big run last year and my training leading up to it, I was more focused on raising money and awareness. So this time around, my whole purpose is what can I, you know, people have run 100 kilometers before. You know, it's great achievement, but people have done it before. So if I can do a world record and prove to people that you definitely can do whatever you bloody want to and put your mind to it, then to me that self-achievement, you know, will be worth it. And another purpose behind it is I'm doing a sprint triathlon every single day for 80 days. What's stopping you from putting on your shoes and taking your dog for a walk? That's to your equivalent of a triathlon that day. I want you to be like, oh, unreal, Blake's just done his triathlon. Oh, I'm going to get up and I'm going to go for a walk. That's what I want. I don't want, you can do a triathlon if you want, but I just want to help as many people as possible and motivate as many people as possible for the purpose of fitness and moving, for ticking off those goals and that self-motivation to make yourself feel better, fall in love with yourself. It's going to help you.
Yeah. So that's worked so well for you. And it all comes back to self-love and wanting to kickstart that in other people so that they can see the value in it too.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And if I can do this, I know it's a long time, like even if I was to do it for a week, I'd hope that the message would get across a little bit. But
yeah, 80 days is a fair whack.
Yeah. It's a fair chunk, but I'm going to do it. I know I'm going to do it. Even if I get injured, touch wood, I know I'm going to do it. And okay, I'm mentally strong, but once upon a time I wasn't and I had to get myself here. And that's what I want to prove to especially young men, the exact same thing, that you can do it.
Well, power to you, bro. Look forward to seeing the celebration on the final day. I got no doubt that you'll get there, but you're already a champion. You're already achieving what you're setting out to do, and you've become someone that you're proud to be, which is what it's all about at the end of the day, and now raising the next generation. And congratulations for that as well, bro. So yeah, thanks for sharing your story and wanting to use your own actions to inspire others, because we're all a little piece of the puzzle and you're a great example of that, to endure what you've endured and have that self-awareness and become who you are now, man. So good on you.
Thanks so much, man. Yeah, thank you so much. It really means a lot. And thank you for allowing me to share. It's, yeah, I've got that message to share and I just wanted to get it out there. So thank you so much.
People want to follow your attempt, where can they go?
Yeah, it's on my, I'm primarily doing it out of my personal Instagram. So it's the _, so _ Mano. It's a self-appointed nickname. and then I obviously tag it through Mates Run as well. And any young bloke that sees this, there's no silly questions. There's no silly conversations. Don't feel silly if you're gonna message us. Please just reach out. I'm more than happy to share any story and any advice. You know, I've also got some things to learn as well. So if anybody wants to reach out, please do.
Legend. Thanks, Blake.
Cool. Thanks so much, man. Cheers. Thanks, man.
That's it for this episode. If you like what we're all about, support us by following Youngblood Men's Mental Health on Instagram and Youngblood Mental Health on TikTok. Every podcast episode is recorded in professional quality video and they're all up on our Youngblood Men's Mental Health YouTube channel. So please show some love and subscribe. Thanks to our local business supporters, NBNA Group and Pro Realty Property Consultants. You can find everything there is to know about the podcast at youngbloodmensmentalhealth.com. And most importantly, please share these stories with anyone in your life who needs to know they're not alone. We're all in this together. Catch you next time.